just doesn't get the attention.
Well, and I'm sure there's track and field athletes that are on the cusp of possibly being an Olympian that they've used their 4 years that say, oh, I'm going to go get an extra year of eligibility. Oh, I'm going to do this. And, you know, this is the downfall from what we went through with the pandemic where we gave kids an opportunity and I thought it was coming to an end. But, you know, is it fair if a 19-year-old sprinter that's trying to improve his time is running against a 25-year-old sprinter that's, you know, physically matured and has run in college for 4 or 5 years and now he's doing it again? I don't think that's accurate. Like, what about tennis? You know, tennis is so infiltrated with European players at the college level. Now, is it fair if an American that's 23 and tried the satellite tours and didn't make it goes back and goes to grad school and leads Stanford to a national title when he's played against, you know, players in the top 200 in the world, and college kids are not that right now?
Well, and that's actually, I mean, that's a great example because I know you know this because you follow tennis, but like if you're a top 50 tennis player, it's an incredible way to make a tour, even or to make a living. Because even if you're, you know, even if you're not contending at Grand Slams, they are still, by being in the top 50, you're still playing for enough money. You have enough exposure. Those guys are making a ton of money. But those people that are like ranked 75th through 200 in the world, like they make absolutely nothing. And like you said, they have like, I'm sure a lot of them now are sitting there going like, all right, what if I go back and find a school that's invested in tennis?
Right. And there are some. There really are. And there are some who, you know, capitalize on that. And listen, that's, and then that sport too, the crazy thing is the reason some of those guys between 75 and 200 will grind it out, because it's literally just figuring out how to win at that level. You know, tennis is such a different dynamic because, you know, not that people necessarily care, 1 or 2 points can change the complexion of an entire match. 1 or 2 points. And we're talking about a ball being in by a couple inches or out by a couple inches, and the whole thing looks different. And that's why I always tell people, like people that are, and you like to wager, tennis wagering is the stupidest sport to ever wager on because the favorites are so heavily favored. And yeah, usually they win, but it is not crazy, even though they talk about massive upsets. It is not insane if the number 60 player in the world goes in and beats, you know, Carlos Alcaraz or beats Jannik Sinner, because those guys are awesome too. And maybe they're young, maybe they're just figuring out. Maybe it's a day where these guys don't have their serve, and yet you're wagering like minus 2,500, and you're like, what are you talking about? It's insane because it's really the guys on the bottom tier are so much better than people realize.
It's like, you know, using this example before we let you go, Arthur Ferry, the kid that I think he was a national champion at Stanford, but he has just been grinding on the mini tours. But because he had a British flag next to his name, he goes on this run in Wimbledon. And I mean, Arthur Ferry, basically from one tournament, just having one massive run, like this guy's going to make money forever.
Yep. Yep.
Because I mean, think about it, every time that they have to, you know, listen, as we just saw at the World Cup, I don't remember the last time David Beckham played a competitive soccer game, but God, we saw a lot of him.
Yep. Well, I mean, anything like the individual sports, especially if you're a golfer, like Sean McKeel is going to have a name forever because he
can never take that trophy away.
Never. And like when I would go to Vegas and play tennis with our former coach, Dave Yeager, we'd play over at Bally's, and David Pate, who nobody knows, but at one point got himself to number one in the world. And now is like the director of tennis at Bally's in Las Vegas. That's not a bad gig to get.
No, it's a pretty damn good one if you can get it.
Yeah, when you can't play anymore, no doubt.
All right, buddy, we appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
That is Eric Hasseltine. Want to remind you, if you're thinking about selling your home, it may seem like it's a stressful proposition. I know it. I've gone through it a couple of times here in the last 4 or 5 years. It is massively stressful, but it doesn't have to be. And it doesn't have to be if you just call my friend Josh Heisaw. The phone number is 901-461-8147. His website's joshhasthebuyers.com. The reason why it doesn't have to be stressful is because Josh will make you a guaranteed instant cash offer at the full market value of your home. You'll get the same convenience that you'll see about all those offers. The text messages flood in, the billboards, we'll buy your house for cash. No, no, no. Those are not the offers you want because they are going to lowball you. Josh Heisel is going to give you the full market value of your home. Also, you don't have to be rushed. You'll have over 4 months to hand over the keys if you need a little bit of extra time. He guarantees that he can sell your house for 100% of the market value, and if he sells it for less, he'll pay you the difference. In the rare event that he can't sell it, he'll even buy your home himself. Josh has thebuyers.com, 901-461-8147. Let's take a break. Let's get into the list. Also, later on this hour, Jonah Dillon is going to join us. We'll continue the preview of Memphis UNLV. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Charles Huff was asked about potentially adding players from the class of 2022. Jonah Dillon was there to hear the answer. We'll talk about what Charles Huff had to say. We'll also preview UNLV with Jonah when he joins us during the next segment. Before we do any of that, let's get into the list. The Power Four. All right, George. So we learned earlier today that the Big Ten is set to pass a rule that doesn't allow players to return from the NFL and play for a Big Ten school. Anyone who has declared for the NFL draft and did not withdraw, appeared on an NFL roster, or signed a contract with a pro league cannot be on a Big Ten roster. Now, for clarification, it seems as if this is targeted towards football for the time being.
Right.
Okay.
Specific in that, but...
Correct. I'm not saying that they wouldn't... This feels... I'm going to bring it up. This feels targeted to football. Would you agree?
I would agree, especially with the events of the last week.
Correct. So, additionally, we learned yesterday off the air... After we got off of the air, the SEC presidents had a video conference.
Yep.
The result of the video conference was the following statement. College athletes, not former professional athletes, have been at the heart of the Southeastern Conference. Individuals who choose to leave college athletics, sign professional playing contracts, and compete professionally should not be then permitted to return to college competition. Allowing that to occur will blur the line between college and professional sports, create significant competitive equity concerns, and reduce opportunities for high school and current college athletes. College sports are for college athletes. The current confusion around national eligibility standards emphasizes the need to advance the Protect College Sports Act. We'll say, doesn't reduce my suspicion that a lot of the chaotic decisions are designed to create more chaos, to create more incentive to pass legislation. Now, there are a couple of things. Let's go back to paragraph two. Allowing that to occur will blur the line between college and professional sports.
That's already there.
That's happened.
Yep, I believe that's a bridge we've already crossed, but okay.
Now, I do also think the second half of that paragraph is fair. I also think that is a convenient reason or a convenient addition to your response because everyone agrees. But I do think it is a legitimate concern. It reduces opportunities for high school and current college athletes.
We're already kind of seeing that.
Correct. I do think that is a legitimate concern. I also think that that's not their primary concern. But I do think that in the big picture, that is a legitimate concern. It is believed that the ACC will pass vote on some type of similar ruling.
Yeah.
With the expectation that the Big 12 would follow suit, it feels as if, George, hang with me here, maybe this was coordinated. Now.
Potentially.
Do I, in general, agree? Yes. But I think the larger question is, how on earth did we get here? And I've kind of started to assemble the timeline. So I think most would cite COVID. With COVID and the pandemic, you created the situation where you essentially wiped away the year.
Yep.
And you gave players an additional year. So by doing that, you essentially poured gas onto the transfer portal. I think that's a little bit more convenient of a message than it is reality. Because I think the reality is this really starts when the Supreme Court unanimously voted 9-0 in the Alston case. And that is the case that essentially Brett Kavanaugh got the old pen and paper out and said, I cannot grant the right to players to get paid, but if you want to, here's how you would do it.
Right. And it also, as much as they were saying, we can't say they can get played or paid, excuse me. We're also not saying they can't.
Correct. And it was like, here's exactly how you should do it.
Right.
And that is what opened up the avenues for everyone to attack and to come to these eligibility cases. So essentially where we are is this. We have seen that if the NCAA is the target, schools, players, associates, however you want to define it, they've not been afraid of going after the NCAA. This will be a fascinating tipping point because this will be probably the first significant trial balloon of self-governance. If the SEC, which seems likely to produce a similar rule today,
yep,
that prevents anyone from playing, signing and playing in the NFL and then going back to college. If they pass that rule, will it be enforceable? Because one thing I think is undoubtedly true, I do not think passing the rule will stop the lawsuits. The question will then become, though, will we see fewer players getting the injunctive relief? So if you think about it like this, initially, Charles Bediako, back in the spring, was granted a TRO to play. The SEC then came out strongly against it and came out strongly against one of their member institutions. And I think after basically 2 weeks,
I think
Charles played five or six. I can't remember exactly. But basically, it was about 2 weeks' time after Greg Sankey basically laid out the exact reasons the TRO was then denied.
Yep.
Citing a lot of the same language. And that was the end of it. Now, I think there's two questions. Number one, would LSU choose the same path that Alabama chose, which was to eventually sit there and say, all right, so be it. Or will LSU go down the route that says, we have a piece of paper that's from a judge that says you cannot prevent him from playing. We will choose not to prevent him from playing or them from playing. Them's probably more appropriate.
Yeah.
So then we get into a legitimate question of who has the leverage. Because on the one hand, why have we not seen schools go against the conference? It's not because of some type of unity. It's because who gives them the biggest check?
That would be the conferences.
Bingo. Now, if you're LSU and you're gaming it out, you have to go, what's the worst case scenario? And this is where it would be fascinating. The worst case scenario is, and I think it's highly unlikely to get to this point, but if you're gaming it out, you have to do this.
Yep. I think I know where you're going with
this. We get removed from the league. All right? Now, if LSU's on the open market, what happens?
Oh, they're getting snatched up immediately.
But by whom? Because there's only one person that matters to get snatched up. Or you have really two choices.
Yeah.
Can you navigate your way to the Big Ten, which I think would be unlikely, but I stress think.
I'm with you in that I believe that is unlikely, especially if we are taking the conferences at their word, in that at the last minute, at the 11th hour, they were supportive of the language in the Protect College Sports Act, which included the clause that you were capped at 16 teams.
Correct.
If we remember correctly, the Big Ten is at 15, and we all know that that last spot
is earmarked. It's capped at 19.
19, excuse me.
They are at 18.
Sorry, yes.
Correct. You had SEC numbers.
Right.
SEC's at 16. Theoretically, they could add to 19. But yes, the Big Ten has earmarked their last spot. They are saving a place.
It's for Notre Dame. We all know that. So I do wonder at that point, this is the, okay, maybe. Because even in that statement from the SEC, they talk about, well, we are still in support of the Protect College Sports Act. We're hoping that our rules can, you know, essentially get us to that point, hold us over to that point until that's passed. And then something like this would be added to the bill.
Correct. Now, the other possibility, I guess there's actually two possibilities beyond that.
I know one of them that it isn't.
You could always do the, fine, we're a big enough brand, we'll go independent.
Okay.
All right. Number one, you got to negotiate your own television deal.
And your own schedule.
And I think the schedule would be the harder part. Because you know at this point, the Big Ten's not going to play you, and the SEC's not going to play you.
Likely not.
Now, can you fill out enough of a schedule with the remainder? If I'm Miami,
I wouldn't risk that.
If you're Notre Dame,
depends how much longer is Miami on their schedule.
I think if you're Notre Dame, you have to sit there and consider it, because the one thing that's going to consistently hurt Notre Dame is another quality opponent.
Yep.
And I think you have to think about it.
Most Big 12 schools, or at least the ones that have major aspirations, I don't expect to go that route.
Well, I mean, I think your mark would probably try to use it as a leverage play. You can come play our teams as a member.
Oh, for sure.
And so you wind up in that. Now, the final possibility, and this is where you would have to know if your decisions have prevented you from being an instigator. But the third possibility is, does this lead to the Super League? Because I do not think the Super League is going to be Greg Sankey calling up Petiti going, fine, let's do it. Let's merge. Here we go. Enough with them. How I think it's going to have to happen is schools calling up themselves. LSU going, why are we splitting all this money? Why are we? Listen, all we did was make a mockery of the rules.
Yeah, so, like we've been doing
correct.
For the last,
like
you
we
know,
were doing this for the greater good. Sure. Mm-hmm. But, and then you call up the rest of the big brands and you organize it yourself. I also think that cooler heads are eventually going to prevail, in the sense that
I don't think we'll get to that point. I'm with you.
Daquan Wright is a good player. Zaven Harris is a good player. They are not the difference between playing for a national championship or not.
Correct.
Why are you doing all of this for their sake?
I mean, like you said, gaming this out, I don't think it is to that point. I don't believe doing it over three players, including the one from Notre Dame.
Correct.
I don't think adding those three players to LSU changes their potential fortunes by that much. Does it make them a better team? Absolutely. These right. guys were in NFL camps for a reason.
Correct.
But I don't think that is so much of a needle mover that LSU would jeopardize, because if they do have to go the independent route, I mean, that is so much effort, so much work, so much money that they're going to have to spend just to try and make up the money. And I know at the end of the day, that's what they're all looking at, is the bottom line. The red and the green on the spreadsheets. I don't know that that's worth it. And I don't know, also, I don't think the SEC, like, to me, for the SEC, that's the nuclear option. They would go through as many potential penalties as humanly possible before getting to that point.
And I think that's kind of the larger question, is are the conferences going to be able to do what the NCAA had not been able to do?
So to me, that is also one of the interesting questions with this, is we're looking at state courts and court rulings that essentially govern over these, you know, state institutions in the NCAA, which is, you know, as of right now, a, you know, state governed, by that I mean like countrywide governed organization. They don't have teeth. You are a member of these conferences essentially at will. More or less. You sign a contract, yeah. But you realistically...
You've given up. Now, I guess that's the other question.
Teams have left. Well, teams have come and gone.
Do you keep... How about this? If you get expelled from the league, and again, I'm with you. I think that is a...
That's the big red button no one wants to press.
Correct. Do you leave with your television rights? Because what actually does bind these conferences is a grant of rights.
Yes.
I would think if you've been removed, you get to take your rights with you.
I was going to say, I think that's where you get the difference of leaving the conference and being expelled from the conference.
Correct.
If you get kicked out, I'm going to assume that you keep, you know, you retain your grant of rights.
Right, but this would then create the same situation where when you have an executive, a coach, whoever it may be, and they're of the opinion, we would like you gone, we'd like you to do this the classy way and step down, the Brian Kelly.
Right.
Over my dead body.
You're going to fire me and I'm going to get my money out of this.
You have every right to fire me. That is stated. But if you fire me, you are paying me $52 million.
You are on the hook.
Correct. So if you're LSU at that point, it's like, okay, you can kick us out. But if you kick us out, you have to send us with essentially the money or right. the money-making asset, which would be their rights. Again, do I think it gets to that? No. I would be curious to know if we're starting to really see everyone looking around going, we can't do this ourselves. The league, the NCAA can't do it, because there is a legitimate question of, can the leagues enforce a rule that a court order says they can't?
But does it actually say that is my question. Like, to me, my question there is, are these court rulings actually saying that, or are they saying you NCAA as institution cannot keep players from playing at whatever level that ends up being. Leagues, on the other hand,
I don't have the TRO in front of me, but I think logically here would be the issue. LSU is a member of not only the Southeastern Conference, but also the NCAA.
Right. Do we think, well, I guess at this point, my question then is, which umbrella is bigger, or which umbrella has more leverage over the university?
Because essentially what we'd seen previously is that the NCAA, we mentioned this yesterday, the SEC had policy that the NCAA did not use the Nico Imaliava transfer trade, which became the trade.
Yeah.
The schools abided by that.
Correct.
And that rule.
And now, they seem more willing to flaunt NCAA rule.
correct. The question will become, though, the LSU of it all.
Yep.
Because if anyone is willing to go, because at the time when Nico became available, LSU had Garrett Nussmeier and they were cool.
Sure.
Sweet. We don't, this is not for us. That's for somebody else to worry about. But the other schools that did have quarterback issues,
they didn't do anything.
Correct.
They let him walk.
Auburn would have probably been better off with Nico Emealy-Ava.
That would have been over Jackson Arnold at the point. Oh, for sure. Whether you love Nico's game or not,
right.
it would have been better than Jackson Arnold.
Correct.
Full stop. And they didn't do it. At whatever the price tag would have been, it's Auburn. They've got the funding.
I mean,
they
here's the thing. I bet the price tag wasn't a whole lot different than Jackson Arnold.
Probably not, especially at that point.
I mean, that was kind of that was a big problem that Auburn had, is because nobody believed in Freeze, they were having to overpay.
Yep.
So the point being, we have seen SEC rules be followed, but the LSU of it all does make you wonder. Now, I still keep coming back to it. At the end of the day, it's like, are you really going to do all? Because I think this would also be true. I'll use Lane's own words yesterday.
Yep.
I'm paraphrasing Lane's comments that he gave at his Monday press conference. But essentially what Lane said was, do I think you should be able to play in the NFL and come back and play college? Personally, no, I do not. But if the rulings are going to say they can play, they're either going to play for you or they're going to play for somebody else, so we're choosing to recruit them. Truthfully, regardless of how you feel about Lane Kiffin, which I know a lot of people here don't feel good about him, that seems like a reasonable, logical, deduction, if you will. Like, if you're going down the line, fine. What if, because what it seems likely now, you're taking away they're going to go play somewhere else?
Correct.
Now, I guess LSU's argument would be, well, we would have to have faith that somebody else wouldn't come try this.
I mean, for what we're saying about the SEC and about SEC teams going against the league for their rules, at the same time, that could be said for just about every single other team across the country. Like, at what point has, I mean, if we're looking at it as, okay, this is the LSU of it all, big money, big brand, when is a Michigan or an Ohio State really gone this heavy, potentially against a Big Ten rule? We kind of haven't.
Correct. Now, I would be curious to know what Indiana thinks.
I mean,
because they did try to get the players. Now, they didn't do it as brashly.
True.
All right, let us take a break. When we come back, Memphis and UNLV, Saturday night, 9 p.m. on Fox. Jonah Dillon has heard from Charles Huff today. We'll talk to him next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jonah Dillon writes about the Memphis Tiger football team as well as the Memphis Grizzlies for the commercial appeal. He's also the co-host of the CA's Tiger podcast. You can follow him on the Everything app at Jonah Dillon. Jonah, first things first, do you have any eligibility left?
I might. I'm trying to check, actually.
Court-ordered or not?
It. What'd you say?
Court-ordered or not. Like, you can have an extra. Do you have, I guess, 5 for 5 wouldn't apply to us, but could you, do you think there's a favorable court that you could find?
I mean, I think definitely. Did my clock start yet? I don't think it did. I think I've still got some time left.
Does the clock apply anymore? That's the other thing I'm always confused on. Does the clock apply? Because you're more than 5 years out.
Yeah. What I've decided basically is every time there's a case, I'll look at it on that specific case. But if you ask me what the rules are, I have absolutely no idea. Like, if you try to explain, okay, this person is eligible because this, okay, fair enough. But the hypothetical stuff and, like, is this person eligible? How many years do they have left? I just have no idea anymore. And so I've just moved on to just tell me if this person is eligible or not, and then we'll move forward. Even that is complicated, obviously, because of the flip-flopping going on here. And so, yeah, just tell me when the game's starting, who's playing, and then we'll figure it out again the next game.
Do we think any of the class of 2022 could apply to Memphis?
Yeah, so it's a weird one. So Memphis didn't have any players. There was a couple, it was only two or three, I think, who like would have been in that group. One of them, Jaden Flaker, went in the portal, went to New Mexico, and he was the guy. You know, he had played for Memphis a little bit, had a tryout, I think, with an NFL team, and is somebody who could have helped the team theoretically. Would he have been a starter? I don't know, 100%.
But you think he would have gotten snaps?
Yeah, he would have been in the mix. I mean, they could have used him, obviously. Again, he wasn't a starter last year. And so even if they were in the portal and they knew he was going to be able to play, they probably still would have gone after some other guys. I think there's a lot of other teams where there were a lot of players in this situation and they had the opportunity to bring him back without having to go through the portal. I think Charles Stuff was asked about this today at the press conference, and you know, he didn't really answer one way or the other, but he did suggest that if there was kind of something definitive on these people are definitely going to be eligible, they would look at it. And there are guys who are going to be in the portal who might get cut from NFL training camps in the next couple of weeks who theoretically could be eligible and be available. And so I think it's possible that Memphis will look at that if there's a situation where there's a fit. But again, then you're talking about somebody coming in after the season started and you're disrupting team flow and depth chart and all that stuff. And so there's a lot of other stuff that ends up going into it.
So I watched the clip that you put online. I had this other thought. Maybe this is just too much time online, but hang with me. I think it seems likely. We know with the Big Ten, they just passed the no NFL player rule. The ACC is reportedly going to do the same. I suspect that the SEC here in the next 48 hours is going to produce something similar. I think the intent is to have the Big 12 do the same. It seems like they're going that way. But I was almost wondering if you're Charles Huff and you're sitting there going, all right, if the Power League say you can't play here, but you have a court rule that says you're going to be eligible to play, the American doesn't have a rule, could that be a home?
Yeah, I saw some people saying this about other leagues too, of like, okay, let's just load up the MAC. Like, let's just see what happens. It's possible for sure if that happened and players were there. There's so many other things that go into it. Like I was talking about before, the players coming in the middle of the season, how is that going to work with team chemistry? The money aspect of it, where it's like most of these teams, especially if you're talking about G6 teams, not only have they already spent their money, they didn't have as much money to begin with.
Correct.
So where is the money coming from to pay these people who theoretically could be top-level players? Now, it's also important to note, like, the people who are thinking about coming back from the NFL, those are not the best players, because if you're definitely going to be on an NFL roster, those people are not the ones who are trying to come back to college. And so you end up in a situation of how much is this person going to help me? If it's somebody who played at a high level in the SEC or something, and now they're going to come play for your team in the American, like, yeah, that could help your team a lot, and it could be worth all the stuff you have to jump through. I think, look, all this stuff with the coaches and with everyone across college football, the bottom line is that everybody wants to improve their team, and they will do almost whatever it takes to improve their team. A lot of people will also talk about how they, you know, or fans, you know, the best one is fans being like, we should never take these players. And then somebody comes to the team. This is every fan base. And it's like, well, this is great. Like, of course, we have to take advantage of this. And so
it's a new era, man. It's a new era.
Yeah, you should just embrace it. Like, you know, maybe we should all, I don't even think this should be put in the universe, but maybe we should all be more like LSU. You know, maybe we should all just accept it. Accept this is what we're doing and this is how it's going to happen. And who knows? I just think that ultimately, like, if these players are available and you're a coach and you know they can come help your team, like, your job is to win football games. And so you're being presented with an opportunity to help yourself do that. It's really hard to look at that and say, no, I'm not interested because of this moral stuff, when other teams are going to take that opportunity. You know that.
Yeah, I think the other thing I've really struggled with is it's obviously a topic that's getting a ton of oxygen. And you get why it's getting a ton of oxygen. It's the same reason why the Bediako case got a ton of oxygen. I'm still not convinced that this particular issue is a massive issue. I think it is in more of the one-off. I do think the larger problem, though, is it is another example of somebody challenging eligibility in the courts and the courts ruling that the eligibility need not apply. Like, that's, to me, like, what I think of as the bigger issue. But, like, as it pertains to Daquan Wright or Xavion Harris, whoever, I do think your beloved alma mater, like, that's interesting to me, is, like, the two guys that they have that are tied to the Colorado case, like, are they going to fight and try to get, now granted they didn't play NFL, so like it's a little bit different, but like that's kind of where I'm like, I know we're yelling about this, but it's like, I'm not sure that this is that big of a deal, this particular issue.
No, I think you're 100% right. We've completely lost the plot with this, and it's not, like, if you're a fan, it's not your fault, because there's a lot of people out there that are using this to try to rile people up.
100%.
Like, every time you see the Cleveland Browns tight end, blah, 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 has entered the portal, this isn't a situation where he played a season with the Browns. Like, you have to understand that there's a huge difference between I was in the NFL for a year playing in the NFL and I was there for training camp preseason games. And so that's meant to get you to have a certain reaction. This situation is completely has nothing to do with the future of eligibility laws and anything like that. It's only happening to this one class of people because of the way that the NCAA rolled out this 5-for-5 thing, which, again, could have been avoided completely. And that's the bottom line of this whole thing. If they didn't want this to happen, they could have rolled this out at a different time when coaches were asking them to do it, by the way. And then this wouldn't be happening. But this is not going to happen next year because the 5-for-5 thing is happening. So those people are going to have the fifth year anyways, and they're going to do that. Now, there's an interesting question, I think, about what eligibility looks like in terms of going to a pro league and coming back. Like, for example, does Cooper Flagg have eligibility? Could he come back and play in college next year because he hasn't been out of high school for 5 years? Like, that's the question that I think has to be litigated at some point, or you are going to see the going back and forth if you're not playing or if you can make more money in college. But as for the stuff happening this year in the NFL players, it's not NFL players coming back to college. It's only happening this one time, and this whole thing is going to move forward after that. And so I think it has been overblown, and again, intentionally overblown by some people because of what's going on.
No, it's definitely being used as fodder, to your point. All right, so we know we've got Memphis and ULV, 9 p.m. Central. You'll be on the Pacific time zone, 7 p.m., Allegiant Stadium.
Get some coffee ready.
What do you think we actually know right now, other than those two teams are going to kick off at 9 p.m.?
We know nothing, which, as Charles Huff said today, is very much by design. I don't know that this is – if both teams are doing it, I don't know who's gaining the advantage. If you saw what Dan Mullen said yesterday, I've watched that clip of him talking about starters about 50 times, and I still don't understand it. And so – look, there's no information coming out. We know UNLV a little bit more because obviously they have returning players. Jed Thomas is their running back, is one of their best players and is a star running back. We know he's going to play, and that's a thing that Memphis has to deal with. The other side for Memphis, the goal has been release as little information as possible about this team going into the season, and they've largely been successful with that, I would say. It just means that when you get to the game, no one has any idea how they're going to react. And I think Charles Huff doesn't know either. Obviously, so many new players, you just don't know how they're going to react in that situation. The potential is super high. I think, look, it's not really crazy to say, but I think that the ceiling is higher than it has been in the past couple of years, and the floor is also lower than it has been in the past couple of years, just because there's a wide range of outcomes. The schedule is tough, looking at the rest of the season. And this is a really difficult way to start. Like, we're used to Memphis over the past couple of years starting with not only an FCS team, but really like a low-level FCS team over the past couple of years. And now you're playing in an environment on the road with an entirely new team against a team that is favored to win. Like, that's a huge thing because there's no time in the first quarter and the second quarter to kind of try to work things out and who do I want to play? Am I going to rotate at this position? It's like you've got to know pretty quickly this is who we want to roll with and this is how we're going to try to execute to win this game because there's going to be no time to waste.
No, I think – so I watched the Dan clip that you're referring to. I think actually I'd kind of – I look at it like this. We have many years of examples of Dan Mullen playing two quarterbacks. Now, it's usually pretty simple. One quarterback is his every down quarterback. The other quarterback becomes like a short yardage, but it's a gimmick. It's a run heavy package. That doesn't mean that you can't have the Tebow jump pass off of it. But in general, it is like essentially your goal line offense or your short yardage offense. It kind of makes sense. Now, the one thing that gives me a little hesitation is I talked to a couple of people out in Vegas that basically were saying, hey, man, Jackson Arnold's, like, not winning this quarterback competition. And so where it does start to get a little confusing when you're interpreting his answer is he just trying to tip his hand that the guy that they brought in to win the job didn't win the job. And I could see that interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, look, it would for sure be an indictment of Jackson Arnold if he didn't win that quarterback job, because like you said, he was brought in to do that. And to be fair, Dan Mullen played two quarterbacks in the first game last year, and then Alex Orji got hurt.
Yeah.
And so that was it. And so I 100% believe him when he says he's going to play both quarterbacks. Again, the rotating people in and out thing, there's a lot of evidence that does not work. And so that's not a good way to win a football game. But having him play or having packages for him, like, would not surprise me at all. And to be fair, the stuff he was saying, like, look, if you're going to get up there, and obviously he wasn't going to give anyone any information, right? That was pretty clear. I'm all for, like, say it in a funny or interesting way. Like, let's at least pretend, like, we don't need to be so serious about this. You don't want to release stuff because you don't want people to know. Like, fair enough. We can all joke about it. It's not that serious. You know what I mean? We don't have to act like this is.
No, I totally agree. Like, to me, it's like the serious issue is, like, I do think that in general, we should be able to make a depth chart and a injury report serious. But the fact is, if I wasn't actually subject to any rules, why would I do it? I'm with you. Like, it's like, I'm thinking about it like on a rational level. Yeah. Like, why would you? It's a disadvantage.
Yeah. The thing is, This goes into a whole other thing. When you talk about the future of college athletics, a lot of people say this is all nothing until we get to collective bargaining. The one thing about collective bargaining in pro sports leagues is that they lay out, here are the media policies.
Yep.
And the league agrees with the players that everybody is going to follow the policies. One of the problems with college athletics is that there are no policies. And so you have some teams that are super open. You can go to practice and watch everything that happens. And then you have some teams where there's no information and no availability and no interviews and stuff like that. And there's a huge wide range. And so if there was collective bargaining, we wouldn't have the same problem. And I think there would be, okay, everyone's going to release a depth chart on this day. Everyone's going to announce injury report on this day. I'm sure it'll come up throughout the season, but the injury report stuff has not been solved by these, you know, quote unquote reports that are now coming out from the conferences. And so that also needs to be addressed. And again, like you said, if I was a coach, Dan Mullen said this and Charles F. said it as well. Like, why would you release information? Obviously there's something to be said for trying to generate fan interest. But also winning football games helps to do that. And so that's, again, why it's a really important game for Memphis, because it's been hard to get information about this team and get people excited. If they go to Las Vegas and win over a potential playoff team week one, that's going to help you sell a lot of tickets going through the rest of the season, especially in the home opener.
No, I think you make a valid point. To me, the one thing coaches have never understood is they are in the ticket selling business. And I think they all just in general view it as, well, I'll win and I'll sell tickets. And it's like, there's a lot more people competing. Like, you need to generate some interest, some connection to your team. But listen, you get paid more than I do, so keep doing it for you. I think that was the way I was looking at it with the Memphis quarterback battle. So I won't put you on the spot, but I was thinking about it like this. There was maybe one story last week in passing, and I can't remember where I'm citing. But almost everyone I've seen that has to make some form of a prediction on the Tiger quarterback battle, have you seen anyone that has gone against Marcus Stokes?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I believe it was Chris Fanini in The Athletic.
Yeah, you're right, 100%.
And he had Aaron Noland as like a transfer to watch or something.
And I didn't know if that was just name recognition, because Chris obviously has covered recruiting a ton, and Aaron Noland's obviously a bigger name than Marcus Stokes was. But like, almost everywhere else I felt like that was kind of commenting on this, that knew, that had at least somewhat of experience of covering Charles Huff, almost all of them were leaning Marcus Stokes.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that, and I think part it might just be, obviously Aaron Noland is a name that people have heard because his name is Aaron, number one, and because he was at Ohio State and South Carolina, and he was a big-time recruit. And so I think that was part of it, because I know we've talked about it before, like when you have like the quarterback rankings and they're putting Marcus Stokes as the quarterback, you can go check that list, The Athletic's quarterback rankings. Their hit rate on like quarterback battles is pretty high, right? Because they're talking to people about
correct.
Stuff. And now some of that is you're talking to people around the industry and the people that we talk to about who do you think is going to win the quarterback competition. It doesn't mean that somebody in the program told them that. And then you have some quarterback competitions that are obviously, you know, very straightforward, or you didn't even realize. I mean, Northwestern named Aiden Childs the starting quarterback the other day. That was when I learned that there was a quarterback competition.
Like, no, I thought the same thing when I saw they named Aiden the starter. I was like, well, that's why they brought him in, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that there was a competition. And so, and again, that's someone who's a fan of the team. So, like, I don't some of these quote-unquote competitions are not really competitions, or at least there's an idea of where things are going. You look at, like, South Florida, Michael Van Buren, it always seemed like he was going to be the guy, and that's just from the outside perspective of just knowing who he was and what that competition was. I think it's fair to say that there was a competition at Memphis. Like, it was not a foregone conclusion, and both guys had opportunities. And there's been no information that's come out throughout the entire year about which guy is doing well or how things are going. You do see some coaches say, this guy's got to step up, now it's the other guy, stuff like that. And again, by design, we'll see what happens when they get to that first game, and then we'll see how they go throughout the season. Because the thing that Charles Huff has said a couple times, and I 100% agree with him, is he said, look, we're going to need both quarterbacks, because especially the way that they want to play offense, and if you're going to run around like that and take those kinds of hits, like, there's a good chance someone gets hurt or is nicked up at some point, and the other guy has to go in, and you've got to be ready. It's a much harder position to be in, to be a backup quarterback and know you might have to go in, than to prepare like you're the starter. And so that's one of the things too, is you don't want to name a guy the starter the middle of the summer or something, and then he's got to wait then prepare as a backup for that long. And so again, we've heard all this stuff. We'll see what happens. Like Charles Huff said, he was like, you guys in 4 days, you'll know all the answers. You don't have to ask me anymore. And then we can all move on. And I think we're all ready to do that.
Well, I was also thinking about, you triggered another thought when I'm going through the Dan Mullen comments. Dan watching a lot of Old Dominion, and then you do the math of, like, well, yeah, of course, that's where Decker was. So obviously, you're going to be better off probably watching that than you were watching Southern Miss film last year. But also, it's kind of like, it felt like Marcus Stokes was the guy that Decker targeted.
Yeah, that's been the thing. And that's the reason why, I mean, I was talking to Marcus Stokes about this in the spring. And that was the thing when he said, yeah, Deck was recruiting me before.